Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. Penn Jillette is here. You may know him as the taller, more vocal half of the magic duo Penn and Teller. He's an outspoken atheist, an outspoken libertarian. You may know him as the guy behind the documentary The Aristocrats, or as a contestant on The Apprentice, or as the host of the podcast Penn Sunday School. And I'll stop now because we actually have to get to the conversation. But Penn Jillette is here today to discuss his new book, Every Day is an Atheist Holiday. Penn Jillette, welcome to WNYC.
Good to hear from you again. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's November 14th. Over the next 2 months, we're going to get Diwali, Yule, Advent, Hanukkah, Christmas. Is this a particularly tough time of year for you?
Actually, it's a wonderful time of year. You know, with my family, we do a big celebration on New Year's Day to start the year fresh. And my children are 6 and 7 years old, and they get to see what everyone else has gotten for presents, and then all I get to do is come over the top, and I'm a good atheist dad. So if their friends get 6 Skylanders. I give them 7. It's really easy. This year, although, they're going to a fancier school, so I'm going to have to buy them a pony.
Listeners, if you've got a question for Penn Jillette about magic, atheism, libertarianism, or even, yes, what it's like to get fired by Donald Trump on television, the phones are open, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And I have to say, your book is not at all cynical. In fact, you spend a lot of it in sort of awe of the world, your children, your family, nature. Do you think that atheists get a bad rap for being fundamentally cynical, for believing in the absence of belief?
It's really funny because atheists get this not only of being cynical, but also not enjoying the awe and wonder of the world and also being arrogant. And what's so odd about it is it seems there's no humility whatsoever in thinking that an omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient being that runs the whole world cares desperately about your sex life. I don't understand how there's any humility in that whatsoever. I mean, all the atheists I know are just in wonder of the universe and think that I don't know is a fine answer. And as far as cynicism, I mean, all we have, you know, you've won this enormous lottery just by being alive. The chances of you being you and here are infinitesimally small. You've won that lottery. Maybe you should be satisfied with that. Maybe you shouldn't be demanding more out of the universe than just a life full of love and sunrises and sunsets and great jello.
Great jello. How did that get in there?
I don't know. It's just that, well, you know, my mom, when I think about my mom, she made me a great jello salad that I love so much, and it's my comfort food. So every time I feel thankful for things in life, that jello salad pops up.
You have a chapter entitled My Son's Morality Does Not Come From God, and you talk about watching your kids refrain from hitting each other and thinking about where they get that compass. How is having kids influence your atheism?
Well, you know, it's very funny, but people will often say when I do book signings and so on, they'll stand up and say, you know, what's if there's no God, what stops me from raping and killing anyone I want? And I always go, I have raped and killed everyone I want, and that number is zero. I think that morality and love for one another is kind of sort of built in. I mean, my children very much know what good is and what wrong is. And I think that when we say the sentence, God is good, we are saying that morality is above God. We're saying that God is good, not, you know, good is God. And the order of the words matter there. And I do think that there's a morality that's even stronger than religion. And occasionally, in fanaticism, religion does trump morality. But for the most part, no matter how much we disagree on things, we tend to have a sense of good and bad above that. And my children have that very clearly without any religion whatsoever.
Let's take a call. Dan in Morristown. You're on WNYC with Penn Jillette. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Penn.
Hey, Dan.
I just want to comment that you see a lot of arguments between religious and atheists. It usually ends up being there is no God, there is God. But isn't it better to just teach people to be objective, and they'll come over, come to whatever conclusion they do that will eventually be truth if they are really objective?
Well, when you say atheist, you are not saying that there is no God. You're saying that you don't actively believe in God. I agree with my evangelical friends, my fundamentalist friends, and my Mormon friends who say that belief is an active state. So when I say I'm an atheist, all I am reporting on is my state of mind right this second. I don't have the knowledge of the universe. As Christopher Hitchens was fond of saying, I don't know the answers, but I also don't think anyone else does. And so I don't actively believe in God and therefore I'm an atheist, but I certainly can't claim to have the answer that there is no God. Those are two different things.
Dan, thank you. If you want to talk to Penn Jillette, 212-433 WNYC, his new book, Every Day is an Atheist Holiday. I want to switch gears entirely for a minute. I recently watched a video of you going on a rant, is probably the right word, about marijuana legalization. Mm-hmm. And you were really hammering the Obama administration for violating states' rights, particularly in California, where the federal government has cracked down on medical marijuana dispensaries. Do you have a reaction to the recent vote in Washington and Colorado legalizing recreational marijuana?
Well, I'm all in favor of that. I always feel I have to add, and perhaps I say it too much, that I've never had a puff of marijuana. I've never had a sip of alcohol. I've never had any recreational drug at all. But I do think that that
really?
Is
never?
A...
Anything?
Never anything. No,
no alcohol?
I've obviously had I've had surgery, so I've been put under anesthetic and so on. But I've never had a recreational drug, and I never even puffed marijuana or put it up to my lips.
I think it was the Saturday Night Live rendition of Mitt Romney where they said, "How do you prepare for the pre-?" Or no, it was himself in his Al Smith dinner routine. How do you prepare for running for president? First, don't drink or smoke for 65 years.
Yeah, well, it's worked very well for me, but the operative words there are for me. I think that people, if you don't have freedom to put what you want in your body, you certainly don't have freedom. But what really troubled me, what set me off about Obama, and of course it's not, he's not unique in this, and there was no difference between Romney on this, but he was on Jimmy Fallon kind of joking about marijuana, and in his book, he talks about smoking a lot of marijuana, and I think he says maybe a little blow, and kind of joking and being kind of lighthearted about that. And then, I believe, he is still pushing for there being a federal prison for people who do that. And I don't know, does he really believe that if he had gone to prison for marijuana, that his life would have been better than it is as president of the United States?
It's actually one of the questions that I would like to see him ask in his post-election news conference this afternoon regarding, will the federal government stop Colorado and Washington from implementing legal recreational marijuana sales as the people in those states voted for, because apparently the feds have a lot to say about it.
I believe that the smart money says the feds are not going to allow that. I mean, we're getting into a lot of double negatives here, but the feds are not going to allow marijuana to be illegal. They're going to step in and stop that. And, you know, he seems to care about states' rights when it comes to gay marriage and not at all when it comes to marijuana legalization.
But I mean, also, I think what you were getting at before, it was a class issue. So he can write in his book that he had some pot as a young guy and maybe some blow. But coming down on the people who do it now, it's, you know, it's a lot of black teenagers who get put into jail.
Yes, it is. And it's also, I mean, we have people like Steve Jobs who talks about smoking a lot of dope. I mean, would our world have been better if Steve Jobs was in prison? And, of course, as a libertarian, there's always the financial element, and I don't want to spend the money to keep potheads in jail. I mean, it's just not worth it. There's no harm they're doing, and it costs, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to keep someone in prison. And we can use that prison space for people who've actually done crimes that have hurt other people. And I like to speak out for marijuana and drug legalization because I'm a teetotaler and a non-smoker. It shows that it's not, a lot of times libertarians are seen as, you know, Republicans who want to smoke pot. I don't want to smoke pot, but I also don't want to arrest people who make a different decision from me.
Penn Jillette with us and Richard in Brooklyn with us. Richard, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, I just had a question because, you know, you've been on that famous Donald Trump show, and probably have some personal relationship with him. Is he really as crazy as his Twitter feed would seem, or is he just full of hot air? Like, is he a crazy racist and wants to start a revolution, or is he just trying to get, you know, some press time for his big hair piece? I'm curious.
I can't answer out of those two choices. I can only say that I have no evidence whatsoever of him being a racist, and I'm absolutely certain it's not a hairpiece. We disagree very much on politics. I think that elections in this country, they're fair. And Obama did win fair and square. My guy, Gary Johnson, got about 1% of the vote, and you don't hear me bitching. But Donald Trump is in a rarefied atmosphere where he kind of feels he can say what he wants. And, of course, he can. I mean, that rarefied atmosphere can also be called the United States. He does have his freedom of speech. But I don't think he's just going for press. I think he really does speak from his heart. I do not think he's a racist, and it is not a hairpiece. And after that, we tend to disagree.
now we've got a news story. Gillette on Trump, not a hairpiece.
Exactly. It's not. I've been within 4 inches of it. It's not a hairpiece.
Nicola in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi to you and Penn.
Hello, Nicola.
Penn, I'm really torn between being the atheist and agnostic thing. Some days I'm an atheist, some days I'm agnostic. Can you help me with that?
I would contend that you are always both. They answer two different questions. They're not on the same continuum. Agnostic answers the epistemological question of how we get knowledge and if knowledge is possible. And almost any sane person believes that we do not have all the knowledge. And many, many people believe that that knowledge is unattainable. We can't possibly know. Atheist answers the theological question, do you actively believe in God? So if you are agnostic, if you think we don't know, then you almost certainly don't actively believe. So my answer is you're not changing day to day. You're just you're not changing what you are. You're changing what you're thinking about. If you're thinking about epistemological issues, then you're an agnostic. If you're thinking about theological issues, then you're an atheist.
Thank you so much. You cleared it up.
No, there you go. Nicola can go on with a clear mind now about what she is, and that's always both. How big a libertarian are you? I mean, you know, libertarianism to a lot of our listeners is fun when you talk about, hey, the government should stay out of our bedrooms and what kind of drugs we use. But then you get to, like, the Ron Paul or Ayn Rand positions where all this debate about how to fix Social Security and Medicare, they don't believe there should have ever been Social Security or Medicare.
Well, you know, you can always go kind of in order. I mean, Gary Johnson and says this, and I'm very willing to do that. First, stop the interventionist wars overseas. All the killing we're doing in the name of our country is, as Teller says, killing people we don't know for reasons we don't understand with money we don't have. Just stop that, and then just stop putting people in jail for victimless crimes. Get all that done, and then we'll sit and talk about what safety nets should be in place. Because if we can make the government a little smaller and stop giving money to really, really rich people, you know, if we can all agree on that, you can talk to me about having a safety net and taking money for that, and I may go for it. I'm really perfectly willing to have that discussion. But let's certainly stop giving money to rich people. Let's try to stop killing as many people as we are, and let's give people a little more freedom. So the answer is, I don't know how much of a libertarian I am until we get a little closer.
Mm. So I wonder how you square your atheism with your magic. Isn't there a certain act of faith involved on the part of the audience, or suspension of disbelief, maybe we should call it, in going to a magic show?
Well, it's really interesting because most art is the willing suspension of disbelief. You know, when you go to a Shakespeare play, some guy you've seen in a Viagra commercial says he's a king, and you go, okay, I'll go with that for the show. You say, I'll say that Robert De Niro is Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver.
Right.
But in a magic show, you have the unwilling suspension of disbelief. You say, I am going to be skeptical, and this guy is going to try to fool me. Now, you're allowed allowed to lie morally because you're within a proscenium, and you've said you're a magician, so you've said you're going to lie, and it all goes to an artistic game type level. So people who go to magic shows don't want to believe. They are following a set of rules in the theater to allow them to have their unwilling suspension of disbelief. So there's nothing squaring that. I mean, Houdini was not the first, but he's certainly the most famous to have taken the magician point of view as a skeptic point of view, saying that I've studied how to lie to people, here's what I've learned, and here's some psychics and here's some mediums and so on who are also lying to you. And now it seems that magic is separated very clearly into two camps in this area. You have the Amazing Randy, you have Penn and Teller, you have Darren Brown over in England, who very strongly say, we are doing tricks. And then you have people, whether you want to talk about psychics and mediums, but also even David Blaine and Chris Angel, who think that the purpose of magic is to keep that edge of mystery in there. And I think magic is supposed to give you a roller coaster ride, have your heart sing, show you things that are unbelievable, but you should always know intellectually at the end of the show that it's a trick. And there are many people working in magic that think that's untrue. You know, my goal in art and my goal in life is to have the intellectual and the visceral collide as fast as they can. When you go on a roller coaster, your gut tells you you're going to die, and your mind tells you, well, you know, if they killed people every day, their insurance rates would be too high.
Right.
And but that's what I want out of every show.
It's
I want to feel safe.
Beautifully put. But you do a trick called the honor system, in mm-hmm. which you tell the audience that you're going to reveal the way a trick works as you do it, and they get to choose whether they want to cover their eyes or keep them open. And there are always people who choose, even people who go to your shows over and over, to keep their eyes closed.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I love that. I love the fact that they are making an artistic choice, but not a moral choice. You know, some people don't ever want to hear the outtakes of Hey Jude. They don't ever want to hear Paul singing it out of tune. They want the Beatles to be perfect and pristine. If you ask them intellectually, do the Beatles rehearse, they would tell you, well, of course they rehearsed. Of course they made mistakes. But they want those things pristine and perfect. And other people enjoy art when they see the nuts and bolts of it, want to see all the mistakes that are made. And magic is just kind of our bit honor system is kind of an idealized version of that choice that you're making. You know, how much do you want to see the sausage being made?
So we're just about out of time, but do you think there's a larger piece of social psychology in that to tie our whole conversation together about willful ignorance about God or government, or is that taking a moment in a magic show too far?
That might be going a little bit too far, mostly because I don't think anybody is – I hope no one is actually making the decision to lie to themselves, although that's probably true. It's a little bit deeper than that and a little bit more insidious, I'm afraid.
Penn Jillette, his new book is Every Day is an Atheist Holiday, and I see you're going to be doing a New York event this evening at the Barnes & Noble in Tribeca tonight at 6. Is that a signing, or are you also going to talk? Are you going to do tricks? What's
going
on?
I'll talk, and I'll read from the book a little bit, and I'll tell a few stories, then I'll hang out with people as long as they want. So come on by.
Penn Jillette, 6 o'clock, Barnes & Noble, Tribeca, the book Every Day is an Atheist Holiday. It's been really, really fun. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us. We'll preview the President's News Conference.